Before I start the talk, if I just tell you a few things about why I'm here and why I know what I'm doing, and that'll give people a chance to come in and out and not disturb us. Okay, I'm Stephen Blake. I'm a therapist. I work at Ruskington near Sleaford in Lincolnshire. It took us about an hour to get here today, so you'll have to work out that distance for yourself if you want to come and visit me. I deal with the way that the mind works and how we produce thoughts and the impact those thoughts have on us. And so usually I'm talking about the thoughts we don't want, because nobody's ever been to me yet and said, oh, I keep thinking all these happy thoughts and it's so draining. Nobody ever does that, okay? So usually when somebody comes along, I say, what is it you would like? And they never tell me what they'd like. They tell me what they wouldn't like or what they'd like removing. So when I start, I'm going to talk about the things that get in the way of having joy and love in your life, and then we'll move into how you actually get them into your life. Okay, everybody all right with that? Can everybody hear me all right? And I was going to say to you, sir, if you can't, move forward. Okay. So that's what I do. I like to inject a bit of humour into it, so if anybody's easily offended, you better go now. Okay, so this is about getting love and joy into your life. Was anybody in my talk yesterday? Just one, two. Okay. So please forgive me if I cover some of the stuff I did yesterday, but I need to state how the mind works. I try and make things as simple as possible. So if anybody's a doctor or a surgeon, they'll go, well, no, not quite like that. It doesn't matter. You have two aspects of the way the mind works. The things that we're aware of, we're conscious of, and the things we're unaware of, we're unconscious of. I don't use the word subconscious, it means under. And our conscious mind holds very little data, and our unconscious mind is capable of anything. So it's not under, it's not subconscious. And it's amazing what it can do, but your unconscious mind only runs programs. It can do more than that, but all we do at the moment is we ask it to run programs. And it runs programs on automatic, so we don't have to think about it. If you think you want a chocolate biscuit from the kitchen, you don't have to say, I need to get out of this chair, my legs need to work, I need to get to the cupboard, oh, my arm needs to work now, I need to open the cupboard. You don't do any of that. Everything we do is automatic. And most people say that 95% of everything we do is automatic. I would say it's more like 99.9% is automatic. It's very rare that we actually have to think of something that we're doing. So the purpose of having conscious mind is to give you a decision. You get the choice on things. You can choose where you go each day. You can choose what clothes you wear. You can choose things that make you feel better. And if we choose things that make us feel worse, there's a reason for that. There must be somewhere a reason if we choose things that make us feel worse. Because your unconscious mind only has one job, to make you survive. And while it's at it, it will help you to look towards things that give you love and joy and away from things that hurt you. That's its only job. So if your unconscious mind is running a program that hurts you in any way, that causes you any bother or grief, whether that's mental or physical, then all that's happening is it's got a program that does that. For that program to run that hurts you, it must be that it's protecting you from something worse than the problem it gives you. Okay? I'll simplify that with, imagine you're out jogging, you go to run in front of a bus and your friend kicks your legs out from under you so you don't go under the bus, knowing full well you'll break both of your legs. But that's better than dying. Okay? And your unconscious does that. It will give you problems, it will give you pain, it will give you heartache so that you don't actually end up with worse than that. Sometimes we self-defeat, we self-sabotage, we do all sorts of things and we don't know why we're doing it. And that means it's at the unconscious level. There's something there says that either I'm not worthy of having this thing Right? So if you're here for more love and joy, but every time it comes into your life, you push it away, there's a bit of you blocking that, going, well, last time you had love and joy, you were disappointed with it. It broke your heart. If you don't fall in love again, you can't break your heart again. So it stops you falling in love again. What a waste of life that is. Okay? As you get older, you realise what's important in life, and it's about love and joy. Love, joy and peace are the three main things that make our lives well worthwhile. Okay? And we can all have those because we're born with them. That's in us. That's our default programme. And somewhere along the way, we get it beaten out of us. We're told things. We might misunderstand things. We see where we are in the way of life, and we put a value on how worthy we are. So I want to start early today with asking you to put a value on your own self-worth out of 10. How much you rate yourself, right? So just think of that, whether you're a 1 or a 10 or somewhere in between. This is your value you put on you. Okay? Anybody here a 10? Yes, we have a 10. 2. Anybody else? Nobody else brave enough to say 10? Because you see, normally when we say we're a 10, all sorts of things come out. Like a kid, you're told you're a big head or you're showing off or something. And we're frightened of being a 10 that somebody will put us down. And lots of people in life will put us down because they feel bad. And if you feel bad, if you put somebody else down, it doesn't make you higher, it just makes it more equal. This is why some people just do everything to put you down or slag you off. So, just bear in mind where you are now, that score out of 10. Okay? And I'm going to come back to that later today, and we'll see if we've increased it just in this session today. Okay? Because I'm going to tell you where self-worth comes from. Self-worth, even though it's your score of you, has to come from somewhere. And when we're a child, we actually do things and we go, oh, mummy, look at me, I'm doing this. And if we're ignored, or we're, like I got quite often as a kid, clipped around the head, we go, oh, that wasn't that clever then, was it? I thought it was clever, but that wasn't that clever. You're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to show off. You're not supposed to be a big head. Your head won't fit through the door. I had the unfortunate thing of rather a large back of the head when I was a kid. So if anybody mentioned big head to me, it literally was, oh my God, yes, I'm a big head. So I took everything on board like that. So we take on board what other people say to us, tell us, and so on. And it might be we're brought up in a lovely warm environment, but just somebody says something once on a bad, catch you on a bad day when you're young, and you go, oh crikey, I'm not worth anything. Right? And you form a belief system around that. And the trouble with belief system is once you have it, you do anything to make sure that things coming in match your belief system. Because if you strongly believe in something, you don't want somebody to tell you that's not true. Because that then you won't have anything. At least now you've got a belief system, even if the belief system is you're not worthy. But at least you've got a system. And so we look out for things that actually match what we think of us. So if you're living life at a 2 out of 10, for instance, you're living life 20% of what it could be. And you're forcing that on yourself. Because you're an adult now, and you get to choose this score. And I hope today that you choose a higher score. And if you can get up to 10, go up to 10, because you can do it in this instant now by choosing it. Because you're in charge. It's your value of you. And as I say that, if you feel really uncomfortable and go, oh, I could only do a 6 or a 7... well, just think why you can't have the other 3 or 4. Why can't you have that? Right? Because it's your value of you. And if you don't put a value on you, who the hell will? And the trouble is, when we put a low score there, so say we give ourselves a 2 out of 10, which is quite often a client that comes to see me, you have to get then this thing that if it doesn't match, you don't believe it. So somebody comes into your life later on, and you're old enough to form a relationship, and somebody comes in your life and says, I want to go out with you. I think you're lovely. And we go, something wrong with them. You must have really bad taste if you want to go out with me. Or we go, what's he after? What's he not telling? Oh, she. What are they not telling me? There's something going on here. And we keep them at arm's length. And they have to fight to get to know us. And then eventually we let them in bit by bit, and we keep pushing them away and pushing them away. And if we take it to the full extent, we actually, at some point, get more and more rude to them and obnoxious or ignoring them or whatever. Things probably that were done to us as a child, until eventually they disappear. And then we go, I knew they didn't love me. Woo! And we keep doing that. And the thing about life is, we're not here to suffer. I don't care what your belief system is. We're not here to suffer, we're here to learn. If you suffer, suffering and pain are very similar. If you have pain, it's a very short-term thing saying, get yourself mended. That's what pain's there for. You put your finger on a thorn and you go, ow! The second you move it, there's a different pain. There's just a hole in your finger now, but you know that you've removed it from the thorn. If you move it away from the rose and it still hurts, you go, thorn in finger. And then you remove it. That's pain. That's what it's there for. We're supposed to have pain. You would be in a very poor state if you didn't have pain. But if you prick yourself on a rose and 20 years later you're still feeling the problem from it, that's suffering. That's needless suffering. So if you're suffering over anything that happened in the past, including physical pain as well as mental pain, you've told yourself the wrong thing. Okay, you're trying to fix the wrong problem. Sometimes it happens that something's so frightening at the time that it really hurts us, physically or emotionally, and we go, oh God, you know, if I forget how bad this is, I might do it again and it'll hurt me just as much again. And so what we do is, we pick the scab off every day. We go, if this heals, I'll forget. So if I pick the scab off every day, and it really hurts again, I'll remember, and then I won't do the first thing I did. Is that stupid or what? Okay, but that's what we do. We keep picking the scab off. We keep going back to something in the past, hurting ourselves with it, so that we don't get hurt. Now, you see, that's just a program, because that's not rational. And as soon as you get your unconscious to know that it's not rational and you don't need it anymore, and it was installed by a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old, it goes, oh, okay. And you go, well, get rid of it, please. And it goes, yeah, fine. You don't need to replace it with something else. Okay. If we lose somebody close to us and we say, I will never get over this, we're actually putting an instruction out not to get over it. We're actually saying, don't get over this, ever. I want to remember, with pain, this loss of this person, because whatever. Because I don't want to forget they existed, or I don't want to forget this. That's the wrong thing to say. You can actually say, I don't want to ever forget how wonderful this person was in my life. Isn't that better than I don't want the pain of the end of their life? Right? Because all you're remembering then is the last bit. That split second when they went from alive to dead. You're not celebrating it, but you're sort of the anniversary of it every day. You're remembering that they died. But they had a whole life before that. I mean, even when you go to a funeral, you celebrate that person's life. They had years and years and years of it. Why do you go to that one bit where they're not alive anymore? Crazy. So it's all about thinking. When you have a thought, just think about what you're thinking there. What did you say today, Trudy, my lovely partner there? Something about this is killing me?
My foot.
She said, my foot's killing me. I said, oh, it's killing you. wow. You know, there's a massive injury there, isn't it, if it's killing her? And the thing is, the pain will be increased by a message like that. It's like, it's killing me. So if she then walks forward and it's comfortable, she goes, something going on here, it's not killing me. Right? I'll have that message back that's killing me. Because it's killing me, isn't it? We think, we exaggerate things. We grow them into things they're not. I came across the word significance. Obviously, I'd come across it before. But I came across the word significance a few months ago. And just everything, everybody I met, everybody I saw, all the clients I dealt with, significance was the thing. It was the core of everything. People were coming along and telling me horrendous things. And I'm saying, well, look at the state of you now, the way you feel and everything. You're in a room, we're having a nice conversation. The room's a nice temperature, it's a nice comfortable place. But you're somewhere else. This is not a physical thing. You're not actually, you're making your body give you that problem with your thoughts, because your thoughts aren't here now. They're either in the future worrying about something that's going to happen, or it's in the past over something you regret. You're not here now, because you're all here now. And if you're thinking about something else, and I am deliberately taking you to things that were good and bad in the past and in the future, to get you to understand that as soon as I do that, your chemicals change. A few of you nearly cried at some things I've said now, because you took yourself to that moment in time and you produce the same chemicals as though it's just happened. Now, the learning from this is, if you can do that, you can take yourself to good things and have good chemicals going around your body. And it's just as blooming easy. Right? It's just that your automatic system doesn't do it. Why doesn't it do it? Because you haven't trained it to do it. Because your automatic system, the unconscious, runs programs. You haven't given it the program. So that's all we need today to do today is give it the program and say, oh, this is what I want you to do from now on. I want you to nip off and do this. So I'm going to tell you how to do something that I want you to do tomorrow morning. And I'm not going to demonstrate it because I'll look silly. And you will look silly when you do it. I want you to get some uplifting music, something like, I always get this wrong, it's either Pharrell Williams or Will Ferrell or something like that. The Happy Song. Yeah, just remind me who he is. Right. get a upbeat song and download it and play it when you get up in the morning. And all you do is you dance to it. But you dance in a way that you allow your body to do whatever it wants to do. But you make sure that every bit of your body joins in. Those who saw me yesterday, I talked about you can't be depressed if you change your body shape. If you do exercise, you can't be depressed and exercise. And the only unfortunate thing is when you're depressed, you don't want to exercise. Okay? But exercise will bring you out of depression. But the depression says, oh no, this is your time. It's the dark hole. You've got to be in the dark hole. You can't be exercising because you wouldn't be in this dark hole then. All right? So it has a counter. It thinks it's protecting you from something. So tomorrow I want you to get up in the morning, put this a tune of anything that you like on, but make it nice and upbeat. And you start off with the fingers, and I am going to demonstrate it now. You start off with the fingers, and you just let the fingers do whatever they want to do. And you'll notice now, even I said the fingers, the wrists join in. And if the wrists join in, you can see now my elbows join in. And then get your elbows moving, and your shoulders, which moves your head, which moves your neck, which moves your body. Get your hips moving, get your legs moving, get your toes moving. But don't do a dad dance, you know, I'll do this. It's nothing like that. Just do whatever your body does. Because whatever your body does will be, let's take the tension out of those areas. Because when you're nice and relaxed, you can't be uptight. I mean, the language is just beautiful. We talk about being uptight. We talk about being down when we're depressed. We talk about being up when we're happy. There's a beautiful language structure that means we've always known this. We've known this for centuries, thousands of years. We've always known this. Gut feelings. Oh, I had a gut feeling about that. They've now discovered that part of the gut is like brain cells. We do have brains in our guts. Okay, so all these things, we've always known them. In the same way that you have happiness, joy and peace inside you, and it just needs to come out. And the only way you can stop being happy, the only way you can stop love is somebody hurts you and you go, I have a broken heart, all my love's poured out. I will now seal it up so nobody can hurt me again. You have no love. Or the love you do have, you kill it off. It withers inside you. Love needs to get out and about, right? It's just an energy force. If you spread it out there, if you share it with other people, you always have more than when you started. And the same is with peace and joy. They're the only things we can share, and we have more of them than when we started. So let's get out there and share it, because you've already got it inside. So even if you've only got a little bit, if you go out and share it with 10 people, you'll have 10 times as much when you come home. It doesn't mean you get it back from the people you share it with. But it's as simple as a smile in the street. You smile at somebody who just, they either smile themselves or they go, it's that bloody nutter from 12-way Rectory Road, Ruskington. But most people just smile, and they have that little smile, and then they go down the road and they're smiling, and somebody else sees them and they smile and they smile and they smile, and it just carries on. And the same goes with what I call a misery guts, or my dad used to call them misery guts, the people that drain the energy out of you. You meet them and they suck all the goodness out of a room even. Okay? They tell you this drama that unfolds, and you listen to this drama for 3 hours on top of all the other dramas they've ever told you in their life, and then you just work out that you've listened for 2 hours that the postman was 10 minutes late. Right? As though it was the end of the world. Now, we all know a drama queen. And if you don't know a drama queen, I'm going to upset you now. You are the drama queen. Because they seem to avoid each other, drama queens. So, we build things up in our head and we turn them into something they're not. We even do this with what people say to us. We don't listen to what they're saying, we listen to what we expect they would say to us, and we base it on how we feel about ourselves, and then we assume that's what they said. So I had somebody repeat to me once what a doctor had said to her just after her father had died. She was obviously very distressed by it. And she said, the doctor said to me, and I can't even remember what it was, but she told me this sentence. And my brain just cried out, he can't have said that. No professional in the world would say to somebody whose father's just died that sentence. And I said, are you sure he said that? And she went, yeah, absolutely. I went, those actual words? And she went, yes. And I thought about it for about a week, and it just kept coming back to me, and I kept going, he wouldn't have said that. And then it came to me, a sentence very similar that would fit the circumstances and everything else, and he would have said. And I thought, I bet he said that. And she came the following week, and I spoke to her, and I said, that, you know that thing with your doctor? Oh yeah, I'm going to sue the hospital, I'm going to do this and that. And I said, I think the doctor actually said, and I said this new sentence, and she said, yes, he did. But he meant what I said. Okay? So we take whatever anybody says to us and we actually turn it into something different. And then we get upset by it. That's crazy. They didn't say that. One of the things I should tell you... Bye! One of the things I should tell you is what anybody else thinks of you is none of your damn business. It's none of your business. There used to be an old saying that you, if you listen behind a door to overhear a conversation about yourself, you'll never hear anything nice. Okay? And it's exactly that. But when you think somebody doesn't like you, and if this happens a lot, if you think lots of people don't like you, I can assure you now, that is not true. That is your belief system that has downgraded you to the point where you don't think you're much. So you go in the other person's head and you go, well, they don't think much of me. So whatever they say, you change it to include the fact that they don't think much very of you, very much of you. Isn't that good how you can change a sentence and it still makes sense? And you're just mind reading. But any children, unfortunately there's children in the audience. You're rubbish at mind reading. You're all rubbish at it. Because you're just reading your own head. You're taking the thoughts you have about you, you put them in somebody else's head, and then you extract them back out, and then you say, that person doesn't like me, or don't think much of me, or that person thinks I'm whatever you think about you. And you can prove that. I had the same woman who told me what the doctor said, but got it wrong. Kept telling me about all these people that upset her, and they thought she was horrible. And I, after a while of knowing her, this wasn't the client, this was just somebody who came to see me often. And after a while, I realised that she thought she was horrible. She didn't say that, it didn't ever come out. But everything she said was about other people thinking she was horrible. So I kept saying, but you're terrible at mind reading. I didn't actually say that. I said, what you think I might say about she was bad at mind reading. And so she came one day with the biggest grin on her face. And she said, you almost had me convinced that it was me that thinks everybody else thinks I'm horrible. And I said, why? She said, somebody this week told me I was horrible. And that proves you wrong. I went, oh, okay, yeah. Consider myself told off. I said, okay, let's change the subject for a minute, which I then didn't. I said, do you have a friend that you consider nice? The nicest friend you've got. Just think of that nicest friend you've got. And I want you to all do this. Think of the nicest friend you've got. Have they ever said anything horrible about anybody? No. That's why they're nice people. Nice people don't say horrible things about other people. And the nicer they are, the more nice they are about everybody, regardless of what they're like. So I said, okay, so she only says nice things about people because she's nice. Okay, so just remind me again what this woman said to you. She said I was horrible. So I said, well, you'd have to be horrible to call somebody horrible, wouldn't you? She said, yes. So I said, was this your brain that went into her brain and fetched it back, or was it her brain? It was her brain. Right. So it's not you thinking you're horrible that you've put in her and then fetched it back. You've actually gone, it's come out of her head, out of her mouth, that you're horrible. So who's that about? Her. Oh, you're right, aren't you? Okay, so whatever anybody says about you is none of your business. Because you could be the nicest person on the planet and somebody will turn that into an insult. I've often had said about me, nice guy, when I was younger. Nice guy, oh, he's a really nice guy, stupid bugger. Because I would do things for people, no reward, nothing. And I'd just get really busy doing things. And if you're that type of person that does things for people, you actually, in the end, resent it. And then they come up and they give you jobs. They just go, oh, you'll do this, won't you? Boom, yours. Right, there's a few nods here. And when they do that, after a while, you get angry. And you get angry with them for giving you this job. You're not angry with them. You're angry with you. Because you said no. You should have said no. You said yes. Or you didn't know how to say it or whatever. The biggest thing that will help towards having joy in your life is assertiveness. If you can be assertive, no, I don't want to do that. Thank you very much for the offer. Very kind of you to want me to dig your garden for 8 hours for free, but I'll pass on that, thank you. Okay? Because just think about this. If somebody asks you to do something for nothing yet again, who's the rude person? You saying no or them asking you to do something for nothing? How rude is that? Go to any of these stands and say, I really like you, give me all this stuff free, please. And then you'll see the answer that you should be giving them. Okay? Just learn to say no. Learn to say no gracefully. Learn to say no and smile and laugh. I sometimes say, I'd love to help you, but I can't be bothered. And they laugh, and then I walk away. And then they go, did he mean that or was he joking? Now, who's on the wrong footing, me or them? They're now going, oh, I'll have to ask him again. Oh, but there's nothing in it for him. And he said no last time. Oh, what am I going to do? Well, I'll get him a bottle of wine. Oh, will that be enough? Suddenly it's their brain that's overcrowded with all these thoughts of how they're going to ask you nicely. Not your head going, oh, how can I get out of this? Because once you've said yes, you're committed. If you then say, oh, but I'm busy, they go, oh, we can do it the next day. Right, there'll always be a reason. But it's them that's rude. Huh? It's like dealing with people who talk all the time and you can't stop them. I tell you now, you could even walk away, they'd carry on talking. Because they're not bothered. They're just spouting it, right? And I make up words and I throw them in. Words that are total gibberish. They don't even notice them. You can be as rude as you like to them, they wouldn't know anyway. Because they're not bothered what you're saying, they want the opportunity for them to say. Right? Now, everybody has their own map of the world. And most of the friction and why we don't have joy and happiness in life is because other people don't comply with our map. But you have a totally different map to everybody on the planet. And even if you've got a twin who was brought up in the same by the same parents in the same house, went to the same school, you're the same age, you came out of hospital at the same time, the whole thing, they'll see the word different to you and have a different map. Now, some of the things on that map will be very similar. You know, oh, you can talk about your parents and they'll think about the same parent, right? Talk about mum, they're not thinking of their mum and you're thinking about your mum, same mum, right? But you talk about other things and they'll have different viewpoints on it and everything else. When we meet somebody and we have a rapport with them, it's because they mention something or we talk about something and we have something in common. And as soon as you latch on to what's in common, even if it's like, oh, I was brought up in Lincoln. Oh, I was brought up in Lincoln. Then suddenly there's this map, Lincoln's there and so on. And so we meet somebody and we start to get on. It might just be the way they smile. It doesn't have to be a physical thing. And we'll notice things on the map are in the same places. And then we go, oh, I really love you. You're just like me. Right? But as we get to know them, and we all know that the honeymoon phase sort of like it tapers off a bit, and we start to spot the differences as well. And then we start to talk about, oh, I've got a lamppost here on my map. And your partner says, mine's over here. And you go, whoa, no, not having that. You've got to move it to here. And they go, why? It's perfect. This on mine, it shines on this thing and I want to see that. Yeah, but mine shines on this. And I want you to move yours there. Because it's not right. And we carry on like this. Let's take something simple like a toilet seat. Right? And there'll be a different viewpoint on this, whether you're male or female. For the females, you leave the toilet seat down. For males, you put the toilet seat up, and you can't be bothered if it's down or up when you get there. Right? It still stays up. For women, they get there, if it's up, it goes down. If it's down, it stays down. Now, on your map, for the females, that's how you have it. And it's nicer and it's neater like that. And for the guys, it's convenient for them when it's up. There's no right or wrong here. But somehow, us guys think we're in the wrong. Because we're the ones that get told off for the toilet seat being up. It mustn't have a toilet seat up, it has to be down. Right? But that's just your map saying that's convenient for me. And the guy's map is, well, that's convenient for me. When people come to my house, I like the lid down. But I have visitors, and they do what the hell they like. The guy will leave the whole thing up, and the women will put the seat down. But they won't put the lid down. But I don't get infuriated over it. Why would I? No need. It's just a different way of seeing things. It's just convenience. But we can have rows about incredibly small details and it really doesn't matter. It's about how you think about it and how you feel about it. But you can change the feelings if it's inappropriate. Why should somebody else have to do something? Because it's on your map there. you can now have a more openness towards other people and an understanding towards it. Now you understand they don't have your map. Right? Because you think things should be a certain way. How often have we all said, well, I wouldn't have done that. We do it, don't we? Somebody does something and we go, well, I wouldn't have done that. And there's outrage. There's like, oh. And I got hit as a kid. So if anybody did something and they didn't get hit, it was like, why are you not getting hit? I do that, I get hit. You know, why do you get away with it? And we do this with younger sisters and brothers and things like that. And we go, they don't get hit, I get hit. Or I'm allowed to stay up till 10, but you're not. And it goes on like that. Because we have this thing then that says, this is the map. These are all the rules. These are all the programs in my head. You know, don't put things on the sink. Put them in the cupboard. Right? It annoys me. Well, it annoys you. So whose problem is it? It wasn't their problem. They put it on. They put a cup on the sink top. They don't see it as a problem. You see it as a problem. Right? So whose annoyance is it? And whose fault is it? It's yours for being annoyed. Okay? And you just change things around and you see it differently. There's a thing called reframing. And it's just a different way of looking at things. And you look for, because we normally look for, well, what possible terrible thing can happen here? Well, why don't we look for the good things that happen in life? I got to a position where I needed to rent some rooms out in my home. And I'd never actually live with anybody else other than a partner or my parents. And suddenly I had strangers in the house. And it was me that got mad over the thing on the sink. Because I had a whole thing of telling them what they could do in the house and what they couldn't. And here's all the rules and we'll all get on well if you do these things. And of course they didn't follow them. So I'd go down and I'd see a cup upside down on the sink with the water ring. And I'm thinking, how many seconds does it take to put it in the cupboard? Right, they've already washed it up. They could have just dried it and put it in the cupboard, or they could have put it in the dishwasher, which would be even easier for them. Right? So I was getting annoyed over these trivial little things. There's noises going on. There's like, oh God, you know, I'm having to let these people in my house. And then I sat down one day and I thought, I'm going to explode soon because this is just too much for me. I just can't cope with having people in my house. So I thought, right, so what's the good intent from this? I thought, well, I invited them in because I had no money. So if I hadn't have got them in, where would I be now? I'd be in digs somewhere because I would have had to sold the house because I couldn't get a mortgage at the time. I'd have lost my job. I'd have lost my car. I'd be in a rented room like they are, in a house somewhere. So I was able to look at it differently then. I looked at it now like they own my house because they're paying the mortgage. And they give me a room with an ensuite. They give me a separate lounge that I can use for myself. And they pay for my car every month. Do I care if they leave a cup on the sink anymore? No, it's their house. Right? Because it only takes me a few seconds to dry it and put it in the cupboard. Right? Exactly the same thing. One used to annoy the hell out of me and it was like, oh, despair. And the other thing is, thank God they're here. Okay, so everything in your life you can just take and say, right, this is how things are. Because there are things in life you can change and there are things in life you can't change. And if you can't change and they bug you, change it the fact that it bugs you. That's all you can do. Because it will just carry on bugging you. I went to a monastery in Scotland. A Buddhist monk was there, Anna Lama. Wonderful woman. First time I met her, she just glowed. There was just this radiance about her. She smiled about everything. There's a group of NLP people all firing questions at her. She, even rude ones, and she just answered it with charm and dignity and this wonderful sort of peaceful feeling. And somebody asked if anything bothered her, and she said, well, I live in a house with two other nuns and three monks and they leave the toilet seat up. And she said, that bothers me a bit. But she said, it's fine. And I saw her 4 years later and she comes out and there's not quite the same spark. There's something going on. And I think she's fed up with doing the same talk to a similar group each time. And there's just something missing. And she's not answering the questions in the same way. There's just not the same life in her. And then somebody said, does anything bother you? And she said, well, I live in this house and I share it with monks. And she said, I'm going to leave the toilet seat up and it really bothers me. And I'm thinking, you get up at 5 a.m. to do prayers to save the world. And you're still annoyed that guys who leave the toilet seat up, you haven't trained them yet to put it down. Right? What a waste of your life. Okay, just deal with it. Just go. These guys just won't stop doing it. And just accept that fact that they do that. And then your life gets better. Just accept. You can't do anything about it. You've nagged them for years and they haven't changed. Just accept that you can't change them and move on with life. Just accept it. Wonderful. It's fine. In fact, it makes it easier to clean the bowl. Just find a reason that it's actually better. That's all you need to do. It's called reframing. I spoke to a woman who, at an event, I just ended up having a coffee and sort of spinning around into a gap, met the most miserable looking woman on the planet, who sort of nearly snarled at me when I went good morning, and then I tried to chat a few times, and you know, how's the journey, and she snarled, and eventually I said, I can see something's wrong, and she said, I've just been made redundant, and I went, brilliant! And she looked like she was about to hit me, and there was this confusion, and she said, I'm sorry, I don't get that. She said, I just told you I've been made redundant. And I went, brilliant. Why do you keep saying brilliant? I said, well, just think of all those things that you can do now that you've never been able to do. And I swear she got 4 inches taller. And her eyes were darting all over. And I could nearly count the amount of things that she was thinking of. And she just changed. And she smiled and she was... And we're still friends today. That was about 5 years ago. You just have to think differently. Because it's thoughts that hurt us. I want you to watch yourself over the next few weeks and actually see when you get there and you're feeling down or fed up or whatever, and just see that it's just a thought. It's just your attitude towards something. It's just a thought. It's not real. It's the way you think it should be, but it isn't. So does that mean everybody else is wrong, or that the program that you're running is wrong? Okay, because we pick up loads of programs. They reckon that about 80% of everything we know about life we learn before we're 6. So you run by a 5-year-old. Okay, it's giving you instructions every day. Some things we update, like language and things, we get better at using it, we add different words in, we get a better vocabulary. Walking, we can adjust to, if we get an injury, we now walk with a limp. But when we first learned to walk, we fell over every few steps. Right? So some programs are installed by regularly learning something, and others we learn in an instant, like anxiety. I don't want to feel like this again, and we get hypervigilant for life. We learn depression in one go. Something happens and we close down and we want to hide away. We learn that, and then we look at the clues and we go, I'm going to have anxiety or depression now. And it brings it on for us. Because it thinks it's looking after you. Right? Either hypervigilance, so you don't have to see it again, or it hides you away in this dark hole with no emotions, thinking you're safe there. It doesn't feel very safe if anybody's got depression. It's horrible. So all you need to tell your brain is, I don't need that program anymore. I don't want to go there. That's not a nice place. It doesn't help me. If I just become more assertive and learn how to deal with things, I won't have to go and hide. Because that's all it is. It's not dealing with things. It's just your way of avoiding dealing with things. Okay, so we're going to get down to love, joy. Okay, love, joy and peace. We're going to include peace now. So, we have this feeling within us. And when I started studying this, I suddenly realised, and it made sense, I was forced to study the Bible when I was a kid. Only because it got us, and my older sister worked this out, my parents weren't religious, but it got us out the house on Sunday morning so they could do other things. Okay. And one of the things I learned about was the barley loaves and the fishes. And I can never remember how many of each there were. But it just didn't, it just like, well, how can you end up with something more than what you started off with? And I went to a hippie event where everybody was asked to bring a plate of food. And quite literally, even though some couples only brought one plate of food, somehow you got fresh plates out and you went to help yourself and you had enough to eat and there was stuff left over. And the brain started going, this is weird. This is just things brought with love to share with other people. And suddenly there seems to be enough to go around and a bit left over. Even though we didn't seem to bring that much. You always tend to eat more than what you took, which is weird. But then I related it across, because all the things in the Bible are just stories that have a meaning. And the whole meaning behind the barley loaves and the fishes is there are things out there that if you share it with other people, you have more than when you started. And that's love. You can't give out love without it expanding massively. It just doesn't happen. If we lock it inside and we're not going to get hurt again, we don't get love. We haven't got love to give and we don't get it back. If we give it away, people give us it back. Not the same people, it doesn't matter who gives you it back. About 2 years ago, I decided on unconditional love for everybody on the planet. Because quite frankly, the people who are nasty and horrible, can you imagine living a life where you're nasty and horrible all the time? And can you imagine the reaction you get day after day after day? Well, back to this belief system, they will talk to people nasty and horrible, who will react nasty and horrible, so they believe that everybody on the planet is the same as them. Now, if somebody shows them love, that blows their mind. Right? They might try and push you away or turn you into this horrible thing by being even more horrible to you. But don't they deserve love to see what it's like so that they share love? So once I decided on this, it was like, well, I'll just have love for everybody, because if they are horrible and nasty, then that's just a program that they've learned from somebody. And they probably learned it from somebody who that's all they learned. And we've got to break the cycle. We need to show love to people. And if you show love to people, you get it back. And since I changed to that, I have no animosity towards anybody. Which you wouldn't think if you see my Facebook quotes about David Cameron and things, but there we are. I just have annoyance with what people do that's not very nice. But there's this thing of giving out love, and you get it back, and you get it back over and over again. So we're going to do an exercise now. And I can prove this exercise works. Because Trudy at the back there, wave to everybody, Trudy, is my partner, who's absolutely wonderful. I was at an event like this about 2 years ago, and I did the very thing I'm going to show you how to do now, which is sending love around the world. And then you gather it back in again. And it just comes back multiplied. It's the most wonderful feeling. And it was a bit quiet, and I was sat on my own, and I thought, right, I'll do this. So I sent love around the world, got it back again. I felt absolutely incredible. I opened my eyes, and Trudy walked towards me. And we were both smitten with each other, and we've been together ever since. So it does work, and it works in ways you can't imagine. And because of this, it's incredible now when I deal with clients. I've got rapport with them straight away. Because I emit love. Because I do genuinely love people. I don't see some people and go, oh, I could love you, but no, you're not quite my type. It's, you know, even guys, I give guys hugs. Frightens the hell out of some of them. Because guys aren't used to being hugged. But I tell you what, if they come and see me again, they always hug me. There's just something different about it. Okay? So, what I'm going to get you to do in a moment is send love around the world, if you're all up for that. You all right? Okay. The more you can make it unconditional, the better. If you don't feel like making it unconditional, that's fine. Just think of the people that you've got it for and allow anybody who's nice, or you can put a condition on it if you want. But it works better if it's unconditional. And we're going to do a thing called an anchor. An anchor is just so you can visit this again when I'm not here. So I would like you to, as I say things, just try and remember what I'm saying. and take yourself there in the future. And it's a bit like charging a battery up. You charge this battery up of unconditional love, and then you emit it. And when you're feeling a bit down and you need that unconditional love, you go back to whatever anchor you put on, which might be touching your finger to your thumb, and you bring this feeling on instantly. But you have to charge the battery up first. So I want you to think of something that you can do discreetly, like touch your finger to your thumb, or, you know, you can touch your head, you can do what you like. But something that you don't normally do, because the last thing you want to do is go for an interview and then suddenly you burst into this lovely phase of shake somebody's hand and you go, I love you. Give me the job, I love you. So you wouldn't do that, actually, but you'd just have that feeling. And you'd keep using up that feeling. So do something that you don't normally do. And typically it's the finger to thumb or something like that. But you do this when the feeling is quite strong. And you hold on to it. And this connects it in your brain with that feeling and that touching that. And as soon as the feeling fades away, you just let that go. And so that makes a connection between that. If you do it often enough, you charge the battery up, and then you can just literally do that and you'll feel this same feeling. I did this once. I had an enlightenment while I was away in Scotland. I woke up one morning, it was just, I didn't know whether you got fully enlightened in one go or whether you got bits of enlightenment, but I just felt wonderful that morning. And I knew things that I didn't know. I mean, it was just the most wonderful feeling. And I went to, it didn't have curtains, it had a shutter. And I went to open these shutters and I knew it opened out on a courtyard that wasn't overlooked, and I was naked. And I opened and the sunlight came in and I did this. And I was like, wow, I don't know what this is, but I'm having some of this, right? And I'm stood there naked doing this, and then I thought, oh, I better anchor this. I want to come back to this. This is a great feeling. So I did this anchor, and I'm sort of like, oh, wonderful. I goes to the meeting I was at, and then I'm driving home. And as I'm driving home, it should have been an instant and then gone, but I saw a white dove flying across the road. I was doing 80 mile an hour, and this seemed to take minutes. This white dove just flew across, and it was all to me, it was like signs of things and messages, and I suddenly I started feeling really good again. I thought, I'll anchor this, and I went for the same anchor. I had to take it off. I was nearly orgasmic doing 80 mile an hour in a car down a motorway, because it was just so much. It was just like, oh, I can't do that. I just had to carry on driving. And thank God I did, because I slowed right down, and on the next bridge was a speed camera. And I went through it at the right speed. So it's really weird. But you'll find things happen in your life. When you're giving out unconditional love, so many things will happen. Wonderful, what I call happy coincidences. They just happen so much in my life. I'll help somebody in my consulting room, and the day before I've read something that helps them. It's always the day before. It's never 2 days before. It just slots in. So here, we're going to do it now. Okay, so I just want you to get yourself comfy, as comfy as you can. If you're crossing anything, uncross it. And close your eyes. And I want you to look inside for a feeling of unconditional love for somebody or something. This could be your children, it could be a pet. It could be anything, but just look for a feeling of love inside. And just feel where it is in your body. And as you start to notice that feeling, just expand it out. Just notice that you can move the molecules apart and get it moving in some way. Get it spinning in a direction. Get some movement there and start to expand it out until there's lots of gaps in between all the particles of it. And this is unconditional love, so it's absolutely limitless. So just fill it out, fill it into your body until it's virtually bursting out through your skin. Till you can't contain it anymore. You've got this unconditional love going. And now I want you to let it out into this room. And as you let it out into this room, I can feel it. Can you all feel it? Everybody else's love is now filling up this room as well with you. Now expand it out across the village, across the town, across the county, across the whole of the UK, overseas, it's heading off. Just imagine now that you're a little old you sat on the top of the world and it's heading off in every direction from you. And everybody it touches is touched by it. And they pass it on and they add a bit of love to it. And it's heading off in every direction around the world now. It's now reached all 7 billion people on the planet. As it comes back now, and as it comes back, it's coming up from every angle on the world, and it's coming back into this room. And as you feel that feeling, put that anchor on, feel that wonderful feeling of all that love touched. You've touched 7 billion people on the planet with your love, and they're sending you it back, multiplied many, many times. Just take that wonderful feeling and own it. This is your feeling. This is the feeling you've had inside since the day you were born. And you can go there anytime you want. Hold that feeling. As the feeling fades, you can let go of that finger and thumb or whatever anchor you're using. But just feel that wonderful feeling. And as it fades away, let go of the anchor and come back into the room, wide awake and alert. How did you all feel? Is that a lovely feeling or what? Now just watch out, because you might fall in love with the next person you see. Mm-hmm. Right? So if you're with anybody that you don't want to be with, just turn away now. Okay. But this is there. You have this inside. It's only when we trap it and we kill it off, we won't let it out. We don't share with others. I came across something yesterday, by the way, of Robin Williams's wife. And she was talking about his loss. And she said that on the night he died, he said to her, "Can I rub your feet?" And she said, "No, you're okay." And she said, "I looked across and he looked really hurt. And he didn't rub her feet and he died shortly afterwards." And she regrets that. You see, sometimes people offer us stuff. And we just go, "No, I'm okay." We don't give them the chance to give. So let other people in, let them give. I think sometimes we're frightened that we owe them a favour then, or they're doing it for their own personal reasons. But you give for no other reason than to give. And you love doing it. Can you imagine if people say no to you? It's a horrible feeling. If somebody gives you a compliment and you go, "Oh no, not this old thing, I just threw it on." Well, how long do you live with them before they stop giving you bloody compliments? Right? You've trained them not to give you compliments. And then we go, "Oh, you never compliment me." And you go, "Well, do I have to give you one now? Because it's going to seem a bit awkward now, isn't it? You're looking lovely." "Oh, you wouldn't bloody say that." And you're back to the same old thing. If somebody offers something, or we were told today of somebody that was taking a guy to hospital who was very ill, and then she became ill. And the guy said, "I'll run you to hospital." And she really wanted somebody with her, but she said, "No, I'll be okay." How horrible is that? He feels like he's doing, "Oh, she did these wonderful things for me." She's only thinking of herself, that she's like, "Oh no, I don't want, you know, I'm not worthy." Well, of course you're worthy. You looked after this other person. Okay? It's just, right. So, now you've been around the planet and back, I just want you to go inside and look at your self-worth. And just tell me how many numbers you've gone up. Okay? Anybody want to volunteer that? You're all very private people. But just understand that only you can mark yourself out of 10. It's not to do with anything else. Everybody on this planet, if you mention it to somebody, they'll moan about them. Right? You mention your favourite pop star and they go, "Oh, he's rubbish." You mention Mother Teresa, some people will tell you she was horrible. She wouldn't give people painkillers because they were here to suffer. She'd give them a bed for the night, but she wouldn't give them painkillers. So, you know, lots of people will go, "Mother Teresa, oh, saint." And other people will go, "Oh no, she's horrible." Whatever you do, people will criticise. But the ones who criticise are horrible people. So take no notice of them. Okay? So you get your own self-worth, get it up to a 10, and you become bulletproof. Because it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks about you if you think you're okay. And if you can't give yourself a 10, that's what you need to think about. Why won't I give myself a 10? It's my rating. It's my rating system. Okay? So if you haven't already given yourself a 10, give yourself a 10 now. And a round of applause. Thank you very much. You've been a lovely audience. Have a good day.